I've tried to be strong and like not tape and see if I could just toughen it up. And I just, it bleeds everywhere and it's awful. So Tips for Getting Sponsored is tough because I had already won 2 world championships before I even got a free bag of chalk. So it's the barrier to entry is high. It's funny. You know, it's a real sport when all of a sudden there's like beef between athletes and like, so there's some like petty drama and it sucks for those people, but I'm in the background being like, guys, we're a real sport now. Like, this is great.
Welcome to another episode of the That's Not Real Climbing podcast. I'm your host, Jenny, and I'm excited to introduce my guest for today, Mo Beck. Mo is a paraclimber in the AU2 class, and she's trying to qualify for the 2028 Paralympics. She's been climbing for over 22 years and had actually retired from competing until hearing about the Paralympics. In this episode, we'll learn more about what it's like climbing with a stump, whether outdoor, indoor, or comp setting is most friendly to her impairment, and we'll talk about petty drama in the community and what sports shopping is in the Paralympics. I hope you enjoy this episode with Mo. Please pardon this brief intermission, but I'm excited to talk about Madrock's newest and softest shoe yet, the Remora Pro. If you like being able to feel the chips you're standing on, and you like not having to worry about standing on sketchy volumes in competitions, then this is the soft shoe for you. They also have a crazy 3D heel that allows you to get more surface area when heel hooking, and inserts that lock your heel into the shoe no matter how hard you're pulling. Feel free to message me if you have any questions about the shoes or sizing, and you can use the discount code NOTREALCLIMBER for 10% off your entire Madrock order. Thank you to Madrock for helping to sponsor the podcast. Now back to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm great.
Do like training?
I had a training session in the morning, but it was puppies were also there, so it wasn't a very focused training session because I kept stopping to go, aw.
Oh, yeah, that's hard.
And came home, took a nap, and now I'm here pretty much.
Do you have like super long training sessions or is it like...
Right now I do. I don't have nationals for another month, so I probably have another 2 weeks of double. Like today was only one session. Probably 3 days a week, I'll do climb in the morning, come home for a couple hours, and then go lift. I got a membership to one of those bro-y gyms, and I actually really love it.
Okay.
But
what's
yeah,
like a non-climbing gym? Or
yeah.
Okay.
Ooh. And it's huge. It's like 17 treadmills and 14 squat racks, and it's full of like the kind of roided out guys that have their boobs hanging out of those really deep cut TikToks.
Yeah.
But I love it because everyone at the climbing gym is so nice that we end up talking and it takes forever and no one talks to me at all at like the big box gym. So
okay. I could see that.
Kind of fun. But it does make for long days, and I'm focusing more on lifting now than I ever have. And I am tired all the time.
What's the reason for that?
Just a change. It's something I've read more about, like, especially now that I'm older, a little older. Mm. Good for general health. I'm kind of more focused on power. Than anything, you know, strong over skinny. And so I'm kind of just mixing it all up this go around, kind of like flipping a lot of the training that I have done in the past on its head.
Okay, cool. Well, I definitely want to get a little bit more into training and your plans for training and nationals a little bit later. But just so people have a good idea of who you are, what is your impairment and what sports class do you compete in?
Sure. So my name is Mo Beck. I'm a professional climber first, probably paraclimber second. And I was born without my left hand, above the wrist, below the elbow. So kind of more towards the wrist. My stump's a little longer. And that places me in the AU2 class for IFSC competitions. And it stands for amputee upper level 2, based on where my amputation is.
And I guess, like, what are the classification differences between 1, 2, and 3?
Yeah, so 1 doesn't quite exist anymore. I got folded into another one. Maybe it'll change one day as numbers grow, but they don't have an elbow. So they're kind of like more of a truly one-armed, or that's how they climb, is using only one arm. We have some folks who have an arm, but maybe they had like a brachial plexus injury, so it kind of just flops around like a fish. And so they climb using one arm. AU2 is me. You have an elbow but no wrist. And then once you have a wrist, you're in the AU3 category. And there is a minimum impairment for that one. Like, sorry, Tommy Caldwell, but the half digit isn't going to get you into the Paralympics.
Okay.
But yeah, those folks generally have the wrist. So it's kind of about your joint count for upper amputees.
Okay, cool. Good to know. And I just want to like make sure that you do just like call it a stump, or Is there like another word for it?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, when I was a little kid, it was my little hand and like cute nicknames. But yeah, stump is generally what most people are going to call it. Okay. You know, there's a more medical term, but that's just like very cold and dry. So it's just a stump.
Okay, cool. I will continue calling it a stump then. I noticed like in photos you like wrap it. Is there like a reasoning behind that, or like how much feeling do you have in it?
So I have, I would say, all the feeling roughly. Because I was born with my amputation, I'm a congenital amputee. I don't have like scar tissue or raw bone like you see in a lot of, especially leg amputees. Most upper limb amputees, at least in the climbing competition circuit, are congenital. And most lower limb amputees have had some sort of traumatic accident. And so if you've lost a limb, you have scar tissue, and it can really hurt to grab things. But for me, I can beat on it pretty well. But the skin that I have there, it's like forearm skin. It's not designed to callus. I've tried to be strong and like not tape and see if I could just toughen it up. And it bleeds everywhere and it's awful.
Oh, really?
There are some folks like me who don't tape. I don't know how. and so for me, the tape protects my skin, but it's still thin enough. Like some people wonder why I don't use a big, thick rubber sleeve. That's because I couldn't feel the holds through that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so the tape allows me to still have that dexterity and feel what I'm grabbing while protecting my skin.
Okay, interesting. Like I just noticed now that I guess my forearms don't get calloused. Because, I mean, you'll like sometimes hurt it on the wall or something. And then I never thought about it.
Well, and like when I climb outside a lot, the Red River Gorge, which is big buckets sometimes. And like above my tape line, I will get like... Gabby and gross, like it turns green. It's really nasty, but it never heals into a callus. Like it just like the scab heals off and then it is. So I do have sort of a subdermal callus, I call it, on the part of my stump that grabs the holds the most. Like the skin on top is still soft, but there's this lump underneath it. And that's has to be from climbing. I mean, I'm sure there's no medical term for it, but that's a new thing. I haven't had a new prosthetic in a long time, but I certainly can't fit any of them from 10 years ago or 15 years ago before I was climbing a lot. Everything's changed.
Okay, interesting. But then the skin on top is still like soft, so it can like break and bleed.
Yeah.
Good to know. It sounds like you've been climbing a long time and then also competing for a while. So how did you get started climbing and then competing eventually?
Yeah, I started climbing in my first climbing experience. I was 12 and it was outside on a really cool granite boulder. I went to an awesome Girl Scout camp in northern middle of nowhere, Maine. And they had these big house-sized glacial erratic boulders. So it was just some 30-foot top rope. I don't think I even made it to the top. But something about climbing, I loved it because I couldn't fake my way through it. A lot of other sports, like I played soccer. But like you use your feet, or like in archery, I could still use my prosthetic. But in rock climbing, it was just like I couldn't fake it. I had to just do it. I had to make up my own things, but it was just it's a really honest sport. It's really pure, like your body and this rock sport. And I also liked it because when you're up there, it's just you and the rock. And I always say the rock doesn't care that I have a disability or that I was a girl or whatever. It's just like you and this rock, and the rock doesn't care versus all the other sports I had done. But when you're 12, you don't have a lot of agency to like go rock climbing if you're not from a rock climbing family. So In high school, I started saving my babysitting money to hire a guy. I grew up outside of Acadia National Park, which has incredible climbing. So I would save up my babysitting money to hire a guide with a girlfriend here and there. And then in college, I promptly joined the outing club and climbing club. And that was kind of the beginning of the end. But that was 20 years ago now, was college.
Did they kind of like... treat you differently like when you were trying to climb, or was it kind of chill just like everyone else?
I definitely did the fake it till you make it thing. I rolled in my freshman year and I was just like, I've read Freedom of the Hills 7th edition and I know everything there is about climbing. And people were like, yeah, okay, sure. but I definitely, you know, there wasn't really, you couldn't just Google how to be a disabled climber or how to belay with one hand back. It didn't exist. So I spent those years just thinking I was the only person like me in the world. Like I must be the only amputee, upper limb amputee rock climbing. So it was a lot of trial and error. And it was I put a lot of pressure on myself to be better and like beat expectations. And I definitely had some doubts on whether people would want to climb with me, because I acted like I had confidence, but I definitely didn't. I was just like, no one's going to want to climb with me. I'm not going to ever climb hard. I'll never be able to lead climb. So I kind of just muddled through for a very long time. And it wasn't until I moved to Colorado in 2012 that I really started climbing a lot with other disabled athletes. But it wasn't until 2009 is when I had my first ever event I did with Parallel Sports. It was ice climbing, actually. And that was my first time climbing with other disabled people. So I was 22. Like, I'd spent two decades thinking I was the only person like me, or not hanging out with people like me. So that was pretty mind-blowing.
And then eventually, how did you get into competition climbing?
That was kind of a whim. So I've been living in Colorado for a bit, climbing a lot, like 3 days a week after work, one weekend day, hitting the gym whenever I could, just really bit it. And in 2013, the Bouldering National Championships from Colorado Springs, and a friend of mine said, hey, they're doing a para category if you want to come down. So I went and I did that, and it didn't suck. I didn't really get climbing comps, but I was like, that was fun. And then 2014 was the first ever paraclimbing nationals for USA Climb. And I went on a whim, last minute flight. It was in Atlanta, Georgia in July. So it was pretty miserable. but I won out of one person in my class.
Yeah, that counts.
And it counts. I have the medal. It's right behind me. That's when the coaches and directors said, like, well, if you want, you had a spot on the team to go to the World Championships in Spain this fall. Do you want to go? And I had never been abroad, always wanted to travel, but was always a little, needed that push. And here's the push. And so I went and I won there out of three, which is better.
Yeah.
But that was kind of, that was my second level of like beginning of the end of this new life, was I came home and like, well, I want to do better. And I know it's going to grow and it's going to be popular. And it's grown immensely. That first nationals in Atlanta was maybe 30 athletes. And next month in Houston, where I am expecting well over 200.
Wow. Yeah.
And the world championships too. My first year, I won out of three. And last year's world championships, which I didn't go to, there probably was at least 20 girls in my category, which is insane to me that there are 20 one-armed female climbers who love climbing enough to like spend the money, spend the time, do this. But I think that speaks to how a para climbing competition is more than just the climbing competition, like the community within para. You know, where else can I talk to other people about how they tape their stump or what they do? So it's just, there's a deeper layer to it than just a competition for all of us.
Yeah, it's really cool how much it's grown. But also, there's nothing wrong with being winning out of one person. I always feel like that has like happened to me in the past. And it's always just like, well, if people wanted to, then they also could have done it. But
I mean, and for a lot of those smaller comps or any comp at all, like showing up to your first one, especially is the hardest part. Like, that's the crux.
Yeah, there's like difficulty in just believing in yourself and signing up to do it like that.
I remember I was fundraising for that Spain World Champs because I was just like, I don't know, I'm like a practically a kid with a, I think I worked for Vail Resorts for $12 an hour. So I did a GoFundMe. And I remember this guy in Mountain Project kind of just ran his mouth about like, well, out of one, that's not impressive. And I was just like, ah, suck it.
You could have done it. Well, I mean, I guess you couldn't have joined that category, but there's other things I'm sure.
I mean, that's the last thing about paraclimbing is we're all one blown stop sign away from joining the team.
Yeah, exactly. So getting into paraclimbing a bit in IFSC/world climbing now, I don't have the experience of what it's like to climb with that impairment. So are there any moves that are like easier for you with your impairment and ones that they set that are like harder for you?
Yeah, I spend a lot of time just even at like the gym daily talking to my friends about that, where you know, there was this route that I did really well on. And a lot of my friends pumped off and fell off. And I was like, you know, guys, I think I actually have an advantage because I have a left stump and there's this like left reach around a steep roof. And if you have an arm and fingers, you're like at this weird lock off angle, I'm trying to crimp and you're pumped. But for me, I can just go boop. And like just the physics of my lever of my arm, I could just hang out there forever. So there certainly are times it's an advantage. I would say usually it's a disadvantage compared, you know, most times, but I'm still all these years later constantly surprising myself by like avoiding a route that has lots of pockets, and this is in the gym, but then I finally I'm like, well, I'm out of 12s to try, I might as well try this one. And then I try it, I'm like, well, actually that went better than I thought. Or something that looks great for me and there's just like something at a like open a pinch at a weird slopey angle where my stump just, as soon as I let go with my right hand, my stump just slides off, and that's the end.
Okay.
So whenever someone's like, what's your style? What do you like? I'm like, I don't know. I'm still learning every day.
Actually, yeah. Also, how hard is it to like keep the tape on the stump? Because whenever I like tape anything, it just slides.
Yeah, it depends. I have a fair amount of surface area. So like the tape sticks to itself and the skin. So that's just more stickiness. Friends of mine with shorter stumps, if they only have like an inch before their elbow, they lose tape all the time because there's just not enough surface area. If it's sweaty or if I'm doing a lot of juggy climbs where like my stump is spinning behind the hold a bit, like especially someplace like the Red where you put it on something then climb past, that can take tape right off. It's crazy how like sticky this tape can be. And then at the top of the pitch, I'm just like, whoop,
oh gosh.
I have started this spring. It actually became a problem. I did a Red trip during, it was a little warm and it kind of ruined the trip. I was like, I can't finish a pitch without my tape sweating off. So I started experimenting with different antihydrals and like, did you know that pole dancers have their own hand cream for grip? Like I've tried that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I call it my stripper sauce. Yeah. And that works okay. But finally I found this just like tough skin pre-spray that is just the best combination of it helps the tape stay, but also I can take it off without losing chunks of flesh. And it doubles great for my knee bar pads too. Like it's a good product, but that was my big breakthrough this year, technically, was just finding how to keep the tape on. Because I can, a hard session in the gym, even with the spray, I can go through a roll of tape in a day.
Oh, okay. So you do like retape throughout a session.
Yeah. I sometimes I don't have to if I'm like dry enough or it's cool enough or maybe I'm doing mostly crimp. But yeah, big, juggy, hot, sweaty sessions. It's a multi-tape day.
Oh, geez. Okay. Good to know. So then thinking about climbing at like general gyms versus at competitions, how is the setting at these competitions? Like, does it feel easier or like more ergonomic compared to regular gym setting? Because like-
Not really. I think it's just like how a normal gym route compares to like an able-bodied comp route, how comp routes, especially modern comp groups, we're seeing those big glass volumes, some like weirder movements. You're not just going up. You're like having to really interpret beta and what the route setters intended. When I started paraclining, it was long enough ago that even like the Lee and Boulder routes are more straightforward. Like they're hard, but they're definitely just like hard climbs versus, you know, even Lee that you see these more gymnastic dynamic movements. Paraclimbing has also changed towards that. Not as much. Like it's going to be really hard to set a dyno that someone missing a left leg or a right leg or above knee and below knee can do equitably. And I will say like paraclimbers, all comp climbers like to complain about the setting, right? If it doesn't go their way. And with paraclimbers, it's even more of an extreme. And I try to balance, like I could just be a better version of myself most times, but it is just an impossible task to set a route where someone missing a left hand and a right hand have an equal shot, and it comes down to their skills, not what side they're on. But it's also just functionally impossible to do that without making it a boring mirrored ladder climb. But I've certainly had competitions where when I was competing in this last, my first 10-year part of comps, there's kind of three of us clustered at the top all the time. Two of us were missing our left hands. One was missing the right. And the girl, Celine, missing the right, she was always going to beat us. Like, she's so strong. But certain comps, like Lucia, who was missing her left like me, we would tie every single time with the exact same move. And it was usually some big, steep move out to a left crimp that, like, we just couldn't reach, or we would tap it, but we couldn't latch onto it. And it's hard mentally to, like, it's hard not to despair and just be like, it'll never be fair. Why do I even bother doing this? Like, it's not showing who the best climber is. Cause you put all three of us in like a gym setting and we're like way closer on regular gym routes or even outside, like compared to what we score in comps. But at the end of the day, I always talk with my coach too, be like, did I screw up or is that move just impossible for me? And he's pretty honest. Sometimes he'll be like, yeah, I just don't think there's a world where you could do that move. But oftentimes he also says, but also we could work towards doing that move. So it's like equal parts holding yourself accountable to being better, and then also being able to let go of just like, this just wasn't the set. And that happens with able body too. Like, we see it, I think, a lot in bouldering where like short women versus tall women, and it's just like, it's that, but just exponentially more obvious with paraclimbing.
I'm really surprised to hear that you guys like kind of tie more often in like a regular gym setting. I would think that with like regular gym setting where they're not exactly thinking about setting for different bodies, it's like or setting specifically for like paraclimbing bodies, that it would be like more pronounced, the
I
differences.
think with gym setting, it's more possible to come up with your own beta. Or like, I was working on a climb on the gym this week where, and this happens a lot, I have been climbing long enough and a lot where I can read a route and see what the setter intended. And I'll often get to a point where I'm like, do I do the intended beta or do I do some weird mo beta? And it's 50-50. Sometimes I choose wrong, and as soon as I get back on and do it the other way, I'm like, yep, that was actually easy if I just do it that way. And so I would say like commercial routes, even at harder grades, still have some kind of options. Where comp routes are just, they're weird and they're hard to practice because our, commercial climbing gyms don't set comp routes for the most part, or use those big volumes. But I think it's the lack of options. It's also our routes at comps. I wish we could have just an AU2 route, but there's just not enough time or surface area for that. So my routes are usually shared with an RP, or a blind or leg amp. So it's not necessarily specifically designed with arm amps in mind.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I feel like paraclimbing setters have a quite a tough job trying to like
It's
put
impossible.
together
I
these
try to
routes.
be really careful when I'm like, what I. Again, everyone's allowed to complain, especially right after a comp. That's why I usually don't post about a comp I'm not happy with until for a couple days.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good
But it
idea.
was my last season in 2023 was frustrating because there was a World Cup where Lucci and I both felt the same spot and was like a move to a crimp on a steep fall into the left. And I was like, man, I really hope the setters for the Burn World Champs see that and learn from it. And then she and I both fell and tied again at the exact same place, exact same move at the World Champs. And that was frustrating because I was like, you guys should have watched us just a couple weeks ago. And like, but at the same time, it's they have the most impossible job out of any setters.
Yeah, it sounds like the most difficult.
I'm not about to sign up to become a pair setter.
Yeah. And I guess in general, it seems like the vibes are a lot more fun and casual at paraclimbing competitions. Did you ever feel like pressure to perform at them, or was it just kind of like a fun
I was gonna
time?
say they can be. I feel like they've gotten less fun, not like a capital fun, but like in a it's a real sport. It's funny. It's a real sport when all of a sudden there's like beef between athletes and like so there's some like petty drama and it sucks for those people. But I'm in the background being like, guys, we're a real sport now. Like this is great. We've arrived. People don't like each other.
Actually, that's even hard to find in like able-bodied climbing competition community as well. I feel like people are too kind still.
Well, we have some weird stuff where it's like.
Please excuse this a brief intermission, but if you're interested in ad-free episodes and would like to unlock over 4 hours of deleted scenes, including one where Mo talks about what USA Climbing does right for paraclimbing and how she makes a living being a full-time climber, do consider helping support this podcast on Patreon. Some other perks include a membership pin shipped to you after 2 months, prioritized guest questions, or the ability to submit video questions, and more to come. The proceeds go back into the podcast to help me break even, and they help me improve the experience of the guests. If you'd like to help out non-monetarily, liking, commenting, and sharing helps a great deal as well. Back to the show.
Like the biggest drama I'm aware of is someone's like, ooh, that person got misclassed. Like they shouldn't be in class. They have this, that's not wrong. Like they should be not competing against me. And that's actually common across para sports. Like the more involved they get in like the Paralympic level, you hear that stuff all the time. Like, oh, he's faking his disability or something like that. But again, as much as that sucks, I also take it as a grain of we're a real sport with like real people want this badly. It's not just a friendly competition like it used to be. It's still friendly. It's still above and beyond like, we're a community first, but it's still fun. I remember one time, I won't say who, but a really well-known able-bodied climber's mom came up to me. I think she had a couple Chardonnays and was just like, Mo, I just love the paraclimbers because they don't care about winning. They just have fun. And I was like, ma'am, I care a whole lot about winning. Absolutely. They are fun. I would say like at our nationals and locals level, they're definitely more fun, but our World Cup and World Champs level, it's pretty cutthroat, which is awesome.
Do you like feel pressure to win?
100%.
Okay.
One of the reasons I retired with the asterisk coming back when I did was because it's like, look, I've never missed an IFSC podium. Let's just stop now. And I won all my national, I won 10 national championships. And I was like, cool, peace, I'm out. So I don't take on retiring lightly because I know those odds, you know, the field's bigger and stronger and younger now. So I might have to let go of that never missed, never not won. But it's a good thing.
Was that the main reason for retiring or?
It wasn't the main. It was just, it was like hitting that 10-year mark. I have a really big love for alpine climbing. So like outdoor sport climbing and comp climbing can overlap a lot. And as far as like, well, if I'm comp fit, then once comp season's over, I can get right outside. But I have a big love for like alpine expeditions and you just cannot do both. And actually paraclimbing is getting so serious where you might have a hard time. Like next summer when I'm full World Cup tour, I doubt I'll be able to have like a fun trip to Ten Sleep to sport climb. It's probably just going to be train. So a lot of it for me was just, I've done my time. It's time to make way for like, let the new generation have at it. You know, sometimes I felt like I was sticking around just to be a number to keep the body count up.
Oh, okay.
Like keep paraclimbing growing, keep our numbers up. And they didn't need that anymore. But it was mostly wanting to be able to just like let go of the rigid training schedule and just focus on outdoor projects, both hard projects and alpine style trips. So when I retired, it was with the asterisk of unless we get into 2028, because it will be our first Paralympics and it's a home games for us. And I'm like, true. That's a 1-2 thing I can't say no to. And so we got in, I want to say it was like spring 24. Yeah, spring 24, we knew that we got into the Paralympics, but we still didn't know which classes got in. That wasn't until last spring they announced that women's AU2 was. So that's when it became like, cool. There's no more red tape between me and making it. I just have to make it now.
Yeah.
So I had a good 2 years off of competition. And so this year I'll be doing nationals and 2 World Cups. I know 2027 is when the qualifiers will be. So or that's the year to qualify for 28. So that will be kind of a heinous schedule. Nationals, 5 or 6 World Cups, World Championships, possibly a separate QE. Yeah, it can be a lot. So
yeah.
But the reason I quit comps too is so I'm training out for Nationals and World Cups. But friends of mine are going to Potrero. And they're like, do you want to go? And I have to say, I can't.
Yeah.
So I got sick of saying no to stuff like that. And that was another reason to retire. But something about the Paralympics too, it's the one date in 2028. And after that, I truly can let go. But not be gone. I definitely see myself as some kind of team manager or some type of coach or something. Like I'll be around forever for sure.
Yeah, it's super cool that it has become serious enough now where people are kind of letting go of the other stuff that they want to do in order to like train for the competition specifically.
Mm-hmm. You have to now. Even through like in 2016 when I last won my second world championships, in my head I was training. And I was strong. But looking back, I'm like, that girl would not make finals now at all. There's no way. The field has become so strong and so diverse that like you really have to, if you want to make finals at a World Cup now for my class, for AU2, you have to be dedicated.
I guess like what did training look like for you at the time? And like, what did you think that you were doing wrong?
Yeah, back then it was just like climbing a lot. You know, and I still had a 9-to-5 then. So I would just go to the gym like 3 or 4 nights a week and just climbing a lot, which gets you for sure to a certain point, but eventually you do plateau. So it wasn't until 2022 that I like really started working with a coach to do off the wall training, cross training, lifting, stuff like that. And now, last summer I started a huge training regimen to do for an outdoor project. I'm kind of carrying that through now. And I don't know the people that can climb at this level while still holding down a job, let alone also having kids. Oh, I don't know how they do it.
Well, who's doing this? It's like, it's hard.
There's some paraclimbers who do.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's some paraclimbers who have regular 9-to-5s and kids and compete. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's insane. So that's extra pressure on me too, because it's like, well, I should just win everything, right? Because this is my full-time job. But that's just how good everyone is. Nothing's guaranteed anymore.
So does that mean that you're also like coming up with a schedule of like doing Para World Cups again as like competition practice?
Yeah, this year I'm doing 2. World Cups, just to kind of, again, dip the toe back in. There's five total this year, which is incredible. I think that's the most we've ever had. They added Laval, France last year, so that's coming back. Salt Lake and Innsbruck are they happen every year. They're the anchors of the tour. And then this year they added a Japan and a South Korea World Cup.
Cool.
But yeah. I'm not going to do those. I'm just going to do Salt Lake and Innsbruck. Salt Lake's practically local. Innsbruck, I've been there a bunch. So it's like the easiest, like mentally to just, I know the gym, I know the town.
Yeah.
Let's just go. And I love doing that one because if that's the end of my comp season, then I can stay for a couple extra weeks and climb outside.
Oh, nice.
Selfishly. Okay. But next year, I have a hunch next year is going to be, and I will do the full tour next year. It will be five or six World Cups plus the World Championships in Spain. Yeah.
Did they already put that out?
2027. Yeah. World Champs.
Oh, okay.
I should know. I'm totally blanking. They added one next year, a Para World Cup in Manchester, UK as well, which I'm really excited for. So it's really amazing to see, you know, Innsbruck and Salt Lake have been the paraclimbing anchors for so long. And it's really great to see other federations stepping up and saying, oh, we believe in para. We're going to put resources into hosting world level competitions in our countries.
Do you already know what the qualification process will look like for?
We don't. So we know that there should be 10 spots per class for the Paralympics. So there should be 10 of me. However, I've heard there's some wiggle room where like my class should get 10 because we're very large. But, you know, there's talk of, oh, well, if this class is smaller, maybe this one should be 12 spots and that one could be 8 spots. We don't know how many countries per class can go, or will there just be like six spots per country overall between all the, like, we just don't know how that will work. And I just can't, and we don't know. I can assume that the 27 world champs will give away some spots like the able-bodied world champs do. Well, we don't know. We don't know if the other spots would come from your world ranking or if there's going to be a standalone QE. We just don't know. So rather than dwell on that, I'm just telling myself, if I'm the best version I can be, it'll work out. I'll make it.
Yeah. You just kind of have to prepare for anything.
Really hope that it stays 10 per class and they keep it as simple 2 per country per class. Because one of my best friends here is in my class and I'm just like, I don't want to have to like worry about beating you until LA. Like, let's just like stay friendly, super friendly, and then, you know, sabotage each other just once versus the whole time.
Okay. Yeah. Do you like feel more pressure now that it's in the Paralympics, or like, do you feel, I know like,
yeah, it's a pretty big thing to declare.
Yeah.
Like I was pressing post on that Instagram post that says, I'm back and I'm going to 2028. I'm like, well, saying that publicly, that's a big declaration. Now I have to do it. And I do think people understand if something happens where I don't make it. But it really holds me accountable to do my best to make it. And then as of right now, I have those goals that I can't even think about my performance right now in 28. I'm just trying to see how this year goes. I think I'll get overwhelmed if I start thinking like, I'm going for a podium, I'm going for goal. Like, I think I just need to slow down and be like, okay, let's just focus on like this next 6 months.
I know I've heard in able-bodied climbing competitions that inclusion into the Olympics has maybe kind of like changed the camaraderie aspect a little bit. Like, there's a little bit more competition going on behind the scenes, or maybe it like changed people's relationships with climbing a little bit. Do you feel like that announcement has changed anything within the paraclimbing community of like, more interest, bigger teams, more competition, like people not being as friendly?
I don't think friendly is the thing. I think, I mean, TBD, right? It's our first.
Sure,
we're not there yet. But as far as interest goes, yeah, last nationals, I commentated for, which I have to say is way more fun, but just as stressful as competing.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And we definitely had some new people show up. And by then, we didn't know who was going to get through class-wise, but we knew we were going to be in 28. And we had some, like, Paralympic swimmers showing up to try their hand at rock climbing.
Oh, really? Cool.
Sport shopping is pretty popular in parasports.
I had no idea. That's funny.
Yeah. I've thought about it, too. I'm just like, oh, I like Nordic skiing. Maybe I should be a double season Paralympic athlete. But yeah, so we've definitely seen some other high-performing athletes appear on the climbing scene. I have a hunch in Houston we'll see even more. Like, the buzz just is going to keep building as we get to 28. On the world stage, it's almost, I don't want to say the opposite, but USAC, again, I like how they do it. we have, if you place first or second, you make the national team and you get support. But the IFSC gives us like 4 spots per class. And so USAC's approach is, you're not going to get cash from us. You're not going to get support from us. But if you want to pay your own way, here's your bib, here's your t-shirt. Like, you can compete. And that actually helped grow the sport more, because that was just bodies to let classes run. Because there are minimum requirements. Like, there has to be 4 countries or 5 countries and 4 people, or 6 countries and 5 people, world champs. And that category just gets canceled if it doesn't happen. So I think we sent a lot of people to comps that maybe weren't ready yet, but we're just like, go, do it.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I think we're still doing that. Other countries, though, now that it's Paralympic, are actually kind of shrinking their teams, where they only want to send people that are probably going to make finals or have to do so well. So this past year was a lot of people's last chance to like do so well on the world stage. And a lot of folks have been around from like the German team, we've been around for years, are no longer coming because they just don't have support of their country and they're not allowed to go without. So I still like, it means we have a really big team, which still takes up some bandwidth, but I really think it's good for the sport that we are sending anybody who's willing to pay their way.
It's interesting also that you called it like sport shopping for the Paralympics.
That's a new term for me too, yeah. Because one of my teammates on Team USA, he also is a competitive paracyclist. And he's like, oh yeah, yeah. Like, once you're an athletic parahuman, you kind of want to pop bop around and experiment to see which sport you're best at that gives you the best shot at making the Paralympics. So that's a lot of people's goal, is just to make the Paralympics. And parasport is still relatively small compared to, like, I think climbing will be a harder sport to sort of walk on and like make the
team.
Yeah,
I'm wondering, so, like, how has that gone?
It's so funny. Last year, we had some very muscular athletes show up, like, again, those para swimmers, para other sports. But climbing is such a technique thing that, like, I do think we're not likely to see too many dark horses just show up out of nowhere and crush. It's more likely to just be some climber we had never heard of than someone coming from another sport.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah, one of my friends, so the sad thing about this Paralympics is not all sport classes got through. Only 4 per gender got through. So I have friends who didn't get through, but have since turned around and now they're trying swimming and track and field and rowing.
Oh, okay.
Because yeah, those classes that they would class for in those sports are in the Paralympics. And they're just like, I just want to go, man. And I'm like, you know what? I respect the hustle.
Yeah.
We all want that super ugly opening ceremonies uniform to rock.
Is that ugly? I didn't see it.
I don't know. I haven't seen 28s, but I just feel like historically they're kind of like over the top.
No, I've seen some really good ones though, I feel like, in the past.
I hope it's a cowboy hat. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I feel like if I were a paraclimber, I'd be like, I'd be like kind of pissed if someone came from another sport and I'd be like, I spent so much time training just for climbing.
Yeah.
You're just going to come from another sport and take
like
it.
Like I said, I think climbing is... I think the only dark horses will just be other climbers who have just been like quietly climbing outside. No one's really heard of them. And then just like, boom, they decide to show up, which is cool. But yeah, I don't think we're as likely to see other para athletes from other sports kind of swoop in, because it's just, there's so much technique and root reading and like so much that's not just muscles.
Thankfully, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I tell myself.
Yeah, exactly. And you had mentioned that, yeah, some sports classes didn't get into the Paralympics for climbing. Were there any like surprises or feelings surrounding that?
Well, and again, we hope it's like able-bodied, where Tokyo, they got the 1 medal, and then Paris, they got 2, and now they're going to have all 3. So I'm really hoping that we're just going to knock their socks off in 28, and then by 2032, they're going to be like, okay, here's 8 medals. And then by 2036, maybe it's okay, all 11 or 12 classes, maybe how you count it, are through.
I guess, like, first, can you give an overview of which ones got in?
So it is AU2, which is my class for men and women, AL2, which is leg amputee for men and women, RP1. RP is you have all your body parts that just don't work right, whether it's from an injury or you have some kind of nerve condition or something. They just don't work right. And RP1 is the most disabled of those. RP2 and 3 is progressively more abled. Sometimes RP3s, if you see them walking, you're like, you're not disabled, but they are. So RP1 got through for that. And then for the blind category, they ended up doing a split where it's men's B1, which is totally blind, and women's B2, which is in the middle of sighted. Like, my friend Sineda, she's the world championship, she's B2. She absolutely cannot drive and can walk into road signs sometimes. But she still can see some things when she climbs. And I think they picked, they split that one just because of numbers. Like there weren't a lot of women B1.
Oh,
so they went
okay.
Keep the field competitive.
And I guess I don't want to make you have to like speak for all of paraclimbing, but just like the general idea of like what the talk has been around what sports classes were included. Like were there harsh feelings or was it kind of like understood?
A little bit of everything. I think the only surprise for me was AL1 not getting through, which is the kind of the seated wheelchair. Because Angelino Zellers, is one of like probably the most well-known para athletes because he just campuses 513. He is paralyzed from, I think, a paragliding accident and just wins everything, campuses everything. It's insane. And it's so visually stunning to watch. But they didn't make it through because there's practically no women, is my theory, I think. But also it could be that in the A class, the AL lower, AL2 did get through. So they'd rather have someone from RP, visually impaired, upper and lower. But I just, man, I was really hoping we would get 5 medals because AL, I think, would have been. But we do need more women. Right now, they are the only class around where if there's not enough women, the women merge into men's and it becomes a co-ed class. Which is really cool because Pavitra is a Belgian climber and she podiums with the men. And it's so cool to see. Such a beast.
Wow. Yeah. The merging gets so complicated. It is really hard to keep up.
They kind of stopped. Yeah. They kind of stopped. They started merging when they started enforcing the minimums. But then as we became Paralympic, you can't merge for Paralympics. It's just kind of frowned upon. And so now it's, and the sport has grown enough where it's less common to not hit those minimum numbers now. So they pretty much have done away with merging, except for the AL, because they still really want to grow that sport. Merging was funny though. Like I won my last World Cup when there wasn't enough AU2. And so you always merge into a more difficult class. And so on paper, I should not have done well. But finals ended up being some kind of vert slab thing. So I ended up winning.
And so for the Paralympics, like Angelino can't go into the AL2 category.
Sadly, no. I still hope that, it'd be so cool, especially because climbing doesn't have to share the venue with other sports, right? It's not like track and field where it's gonna be busy. I really would love it if they could do some kind of exhibition while we're there, like let the other class behind and touch that wall, but especially AL, because what a wild class.
Okay, that'll be interesting to see. And so how are you changing, going back to like your training process, how are you changing your training this time to qualify?
Yeah, it's I started training specifically more for outdoors and I found myself getting kind of sick strong all over. And I'm like, well, I'm still going to do comp specific training as far as movement goes. Like I'm actually heading to Salt Lake for next week to train at the National Training Center and work with their coaches on like those comp movements. But overall, my training now has shifted to really like strength and power. I used to be such a fan of endurance because it's fun to get your endurance up, but you know, with the way the route settings change and the competition has changed, I'm never pumping off clients anymore. I'm falling because it's a power move that I can't do, or if there's like a movement that I can't do. I'm never just like, it's not like the Red River Gorge where you fall off of huge jugs because you're pumped. That's not what's happening in the comps anymore. And then I've also found, so I'm 39 now, and which is, but strength training is playing into that. I've even shifted from like, I used to do a ton of Orange Theory, like lightweights, low reps and stuff, and love that cardio. And then just the past couple months, I quit that. I'm trying to lift heavy. Like I'm squatting, I'm deadlifting, I'm like bench pressing. And I've never been healthier. Like outside of an acute injury that I gave myself this fall, like everything feels great. And I feel strong. I'm hungry all the time, but all of a sudden I'm doing these moves in the wall that I look at it and I'm like, oh, it's going to be so hard. And then I just do it. And I think, whoa, that was actually not that bad. But it is, yeah, I do think I'm having also just like this age body shift where like, I can't train like I was when I was 25. I take more rest days now, or I should at least. And it's just, you know, as you get older, your body responds to rest better. Like not only do you not need them when you're younger, but it's like easier to detrain when you're younger. But when you're older, your body has this memory now and like more rest days can be more beneficial in your late 30s than it would have been in your mid 20s.
Was that just something you felt like gradually happened, or was there like a moment or like an injury or something where
you know, I never felt like I was slowly starting to suck more.
Okay, that's
but
good.
when I when I had this shift in training, I felt myself improving all of a sudden in a way that I haven't had that kind of plateau breakthrough in a very long time. And I think the breakthrough is still happening. Like this wasn't intentional, but I think it's going to be really cool to come back to comps in the best shape I've ever been. There's part of me, it's just like, these girls don't know it's coming. Like, they're thinking, oh, she hasn't been climbing for 2 years, she hasn't been competing. Like, in my first year after comps, I like for sure mostly alpine climbed, put on some helpful weight, had a blast. But it's been really fun to just like dial it back in and discover that I haven't peaked yet, which is
really cool. And going back to you like doing training at the National Training Center, do they hold stuff for paraclimbers often, or what does that look like?
One of the most transformational things to happen with becoming Paralympic is USAC now has USOPC, which is so many acronyms, has funding specifically for para. And that kind of opened up once those four classes got named, because USOPC was like, yeah, you don't really know who's going yet. Like, we can't really like, but now that we know the four, like, we know that those four are supported. So we now have a full-time para-specific coach based Salt Lake, which is great, because I met him 10, 12 years ago in Colorado, where he was my personal coach. So I've known him for a long time. But for him to have this facility where he can just be like, okay, just set you something, try this move. Like, that's something I can't do at any other gym, really. And like, my home gym here is fantastic. Like, I'll send them videos and they'll set stuff for me, but it's something else to be at the National Training Center and just have this. And it's a newer training center for them. And it looks so cool. Like, there's ropes now, and there used to not be ropes. And then Salt Lake's just such a great spot. There's so many great gyms there that, you know, you don't have to be in the training center to go train. It's such a privilege, but I love traveling to train. Like, I have all the resources here that I need. But when you're home, it's so easy to be like, oh, I have to do laundry today, or like get distracted. But like, when I'm in Salt Lake, it's my job. That is my job, is to be there and train. And it's really helpful.
That sounds super exciting. One of the audience questions that come in was from one Megan, one Exorcism on Instagram. Feelings about going to nationals this year. Is this the time to qualify? What does the process look like?
Yeah, well, it's like, so we still don't know how to qualify for the Olympics yet, Paralympics, but I am extremely skeptical that this year will matter at all. I think it's too early. Like, just given how other sports work and even how climbing works, like, no one on bouldering is qualifying for the LA Games this year. So I'm treating this year as a warm-up, tune-up year.
Where you're at.
See where I'm at, except that I might lose those records of only winning nationals and never missing a podium. It's very possible. See where I'm at, keep it fun, knowing that 2027 is going to be like the most intense, punishing, mentally challenging. My poor husband is the same. But I'm nervous for nationals, because I know Ellie and Isabel, like the two women who podium around me there, have been competing for the last 2 years straight and are only getting stronger. It's both an asset to have been around a while, but it's also like the micro bits I have left to improve, are smaller. Whereas when you're a newer climber and younger, like, you can make these huge leaps of improvements. That said, I did just say, I feel like I'm in the midst of a huge leap. So that's cool.
And also the technique that you gain after like many years of climbing.
Yeah. And I wish I could say I like have ISO and the nerves for comps figured out, but I don't. I don't think anybody does. ISO will always suck for everybody. It is what it is. Nationals is tricky for me because I try to balance being social as well. Like, I want to meet all the new people. You know, I kind of miss the days where you did know everybody because it was small enough. And now I'm just like, I don't know who these people are. And I want to know them while also still taking space for myself, being like, I'm here to be an athlete and do a job. That's a really hard thing for me to balance at most comps. But nationals will be great this year. I think this will be our first real year of previewing who could be making up our Paralympic team.
Okay. Yeah. That'll be cool to see. So you said like after all these years, you still don't know how to, I guess, like break their nerves of comps.
Yeah. I mean, that's another reason I quit, is because I would be like in ISO. And my friends have joked like, oh, poor you. You're always in ISO because you always make finals. But I'm just like, yeah. And it just like every time I'm back there, I'm nauseous. I don't have an appetite. I'm just like, why do I do this? Like, comps aren't fun. And then once it's over, you just... Maybe that's why I also like alpine climbing, because you forget the suffering. Otherwise, you would never do it again. And I think maybe comps are like that. You forget the lows, the nerves, the lack of sleep the night before, and you just keep doing it because there's something about it. I always keep coming back. Comps are tough too, because like, I know Celine feels this way. We've talked about it, where even if you win, if you don't top, you're just like, oh, well, I wish I topped, or I wish it does me better. So like, I think we're all at the high performing level, we're all pretty hard on ourselves of never really being happy. So that's something I'm personally trying to work on. This is probably going to be the season, or at least next season, that I actually do start working with like a sports psychiatrist to like figure out some better nerves and things like that. But yeah, it's again, it's like, do I miss the old days where it was like easier and more friendly? Sure. But if the consequence of the sport being more serious and the other athletes have gotten so strong that I can't make the team anymore, that's like honestly a best case scenario. If they don't need, if I'm not the strongest anymore, that means the sport has just grown so much. I'm still going to make it though. I'm going to podium in LA. I'll say it now. I'm going to get a medal in LA.
Ooh, okay. I like it. And it's a good way to think about it either way. Okay. So going into outdoor climbing. So I guess like just generally, how does outdoor climbing compare to indoor climbing for you in terms of like if it's more or less friendly to your impairment?
That's even more of a depends. I'm not a giant fan of, I guess, granite, which is ironic because the hardest climb I've ever done was granite. I love the red, which on paper I shouldn't, because it's steep, and steep climbing can be really hard for upper limb because like your chest stays so close, and like I can only ever clip with my right. So if I'm like, hey, yeah, it's just like on paper vert should be my thing, but I love the red because the holds are so good, and you can, and there's so many of them, you can make up your own micro beta instead of like having to do specific stuff for a lot. But I also love tense sleep style, like techie vert. The only thing I hate is probably Friction Slab. And I think some people would say, oh, but that's all feet, you don't need your hands. And it's terrifying. I'm just scared. I think everybody is. That's the only thing I'd be like, hard pass, no slab, no thank you.
Okay. So you really just have to work on your slab climbing.
Pretty much. Although I would say, I feel like slab climbing, when there is a hand, it's your only option. You have to use it. So if there happens to be a key left, I'd just be like, I'm screwed. I'm stuck on this slab forever.
I see.
No, because there's no bouldering in para. So like there's literally the closest we have to slab is now and then the, like in Villars, that wall was kind of skinny. So some of our qualies and a finals route was on speed wall, which is still 15 degrees over.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the closest to slab we get. Sometimes at nationals, because we're in a commercial gym and there's so many of us, some of the RP1 routes might be on more vert, but probably never actual slab.
That makes sense. So like what projects do you have going on right now?
So I'm working on, I was really hoping to get it this fall, but I didn't. So I'm going back in a couple weeks. I want to push harder. So I made a film years ago, my first 512, and turns out that wasn't enough. And so now I want to do even harder things. So I have a beautiful line I'm working on the red called Far From God. And again, it's like on paper, my anti-style. It's 110 feet, mega overhanging, like V3 boulder problem opening that's like 55 degrees, but there's something about it that I just love. Huge falls too. I'm kind of a wimp when it comes to falls, but on this thing I'm taking like 30 footers, just like woo! it's so fun. And I love the Red River Gorge. It's a second home to us. I go for like 2 months every fall now. That's where we host the Adaptive Climbers Festival, which is probably where my heart and passion is, even more so than comps, is this festival. It's just a beautiful world-class climbing spot, and the locals are incredible, and it's accessible for so many people, and I just love it. But again, on paper, steep overhanging jugs is not great for AU athletes, but there's something about it I just really love.
And you're getting out there in a couple weeks?
Yeah, after nationals, I'll come home for a week and then start driving to Kentucky.
Okay, best of luck to you there, and at nationals too.
Thanks, yeah, it'll be good.
Outside of climbing, anything else you have time for?
Yeah, there's my other, I guess, passion sport actually, and there's days I like it more than climbing, more than I should admit. I'm a big fly fisher, but yeah, I love fishing. I catch and release because I don't like the way they taste, but there's something about being in the river. It's kind of like climbing, where when you're climbing, it's so immersive that you like lose track of everything else. Fishing's the same way. You're like in the river, you're like constantly reading the river, you know, trying to think like a fish and like experimenting. So it's just so immersive that you don't have time to think about like, oh, I have this bill to pay or I have to do laundry. It's just immersive. The greatest irony of my life is my husband is not a rock climber. He hates rock climbing. And so he also fishes, but he's big into whitewater rafting. We own two rafts, which I never thought I would say. So I've actually kind of dabbled with some raft only access rock climbing. And I think one of the trips I would like to do post Paralympics would be like a desert raft first descent trip, floating the Colorado River in the desert and finding some sandstone, beautiful lines that haven't been climbed yet would be really fun. As well as in 2018, I did an expedition to the Cirque of the Unclimbables. And we did not do the climb in the style we wanted. So I've been wanting to go back for revenge, but you can also, we flew in directly, but you can also fly on the raft, float the Nahanni River for a couple of days, jump out, do the climb, and then float out. And I'm like, that would be cool.
That is cool.
So in 2029, you're going to see me a lot of outside big adventures.
Does that also mean like deep water soloing or is that like different?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
I haven't done real deep water soloing. I've done like the Seagull Block wall a couple times. Low key hated every minute of it. So scary.
Oh,
I was letting go before I was pumped because I was just like, I do not want to fall from any higher.
Yeah,
I'm not a swimming in the water person. Like fishing's my maximum. For rafting, I like to sit in the front and drink a beer. That's my level of.
Oh, gotcha. Oh, so it's like kind of chill. Okay.
Yeah. Or if it's not, I'll hang on and then go back to the beer. But deep water soloing has never spoken to me, and I'm okay with that.
That's fair. I guess, yeah, I never really thought about like how scary it would be to fall from that height into water because it's not exactly safe if you don't know how to fall into water.
No, I mean, there's a reason why at these comps, they have the lifeguards in the water. And so the idea of doing it outside in Spain where there's no lifeguards, I'm like, what? And it's really hard. This was surprising to me. I'm not a great swimmer as it is. Like I'm finding Nemo over here. I'm lopsided. But when you have climbing shoes on, you can't kick. Like you're trying to propel yourself up to air and it's just slicing through the water. It was just.
Oh no. I never thought about that.
Once in Montreal, like my sports bra came off in the pool. So I was like trying to get my bra down on my surface. I was trying not to be naked as this like teenage lifeguards coming to rescue me. And I'm just like topless and drowning. Yeah. I'm not a big fan. I love it as a community building event, though. Like the deep water solo comps are so, so much fun. It's a beach party for climbing. So hopefully maybe this summer I could commentate the big event that North Face does. But I don't think you're going to see me in the water anymore. I did my time.
Wow. No, I had no idea. That really sucks. I guess, yeah, I should definitely never do it because I can't swim. So.
Well, on the flip side, the comp that was in, New York, did you have to fall into the East River? That was kind of gross. Yes.
Ugh.
But were you then rescued by like very fine looking New York firefighter? Also, yes.
Okay.
So like nice. There's a balance.
Okay, nice. I don't know though. I think I'd rather not drown and like be in gross water. That sounds like too much for me.
But you know, they make for good stories once you're out and alive.
Yeah, for sure. That sounds fun. Okay, let's get into some of the audience submitted questions. This one is from Lucky Penguin 3. Favorite comp memory? If it was the firefighter one, I don't know, maybe.
I mean, that's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, no, I'm drowning. Come save me, handsome. It probably was that Edinburgh comp in 2017. That whole summer, I was filming Stumped for Real Rock and was just like not sending, like could not get this climb. Took a break to go do a World Cup in Scotland, mostly because I wanted to go around after and drink a lot of whiskey. and we were merged. There weren't enough of me of AU2, so we merged into RP2. And like, God, the women in RP2 are so strong. And I was like, oh well, I'm not gonna do well. Maybe I won't make finals. I'm just here for a good time. And I made finals in like fourth place or something. And so I came out kind of early, did my climb. I'm like eating a haggis burrito, and the girl after me falls before me. I was like, oh wow, holy shit, I got third. Cool. I'm like chit-chatting. The next girl falls, and I'm like, oh my God, I think I got second. And now I'm watching the last girl, Hannah Baldwin, who is so strong. There's no world where I should beat her. But again, because it was just more of a slabby style, she had no use of her legs. Like it was paralyzed.
Oh, yeah.
So because it was this vert slab, all of a sudden she pops off and I just look at my husband and I was like, did I just did I just win? And it was so unexpected. So that's a favorite. My other favorite was the World Champs in Briançon in 2019. I had just torn my hip labrum like 3 weeks before, like kind of badly. Like I was in so much pain. I could have pulled out of the comp, but I was just like, flights are booked. I'm like, whatever. And so I made finals. And something happened at finals where I just found this beast mode that I didn't know existed. And I climbed like I had never climbed before. I didn't notice the pain. I climbed despite of it. Or like when you're competing, you get this tunnel vision. Like you don't hear the crowd. You don't feel pain. You're not afraid of falling. And I get off the wall and our coach was just like, who the hell was that? And I was like, I don't know. I have no idea. And I got silver, but that silver felt like gold to me because I did beat one of my like long-term neck and neck people. And I performed despite the injury, but it was mostly that even if I hadn't medaled, I'm like, that is the best I've ever climbed, or the best I've ever felt. So I'm always chasing that feeling of just like, you know how I said, even if you win, if you're on top, you feel shitty sometimes.
Yeah.
That was one where it didn't matter the color of my medal. I was like, that's the best I've ever done and could have done. I just felt.
Yeah. I guess it's kind of like the power of not having expectations.
And I always black out my climbs anyway. Like I get to the ground, I'm like, I don't know what just happened. I have no memory of anything. So, but that one, I kind of remember being in the steep part of the wall and just being like, fachoo, fachoo, fachoo. And that, yeah, chasing that high.
No, I totally agree with that. Yeah. Okay. Next one from Gimpin and Still Crimpin. If you podium at LA 2028, will you eat a cupcake on the podium? I don't know if there's like backstory to this.
Yeah. There's a long time, where I was eating cupcakes on podiums.
Okay.
and sadly I've lost my sweet tooth with age a bit.
No.
Which it's funny as a kid, like I remember my mom being like, oh no, I don't want any cake or ice cream. It's too sweet. I'm like, mom, you're nuts. But now I get it. Like we do kind of lose it.
Oh no.
But when I podium in LA, absolutely. As long as I'm not breaking some weird like IPC rule about celebrating too hard or something. Like as long as it's cool, I don't want to get fined or kicked off or anything. But there will be cupcakes regardless. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like a fine would be worth it. Well, depending on how much.
You're right. A fine would be worth it. I'm done after LA. I don't have anything.
Yeah, exactly.
I can burn all the free shit.
Wait, when do you feel like you lost your sweet tooth? Because I'm like big into sweets and I don't know. I don't know if I'll ever lose it.
I think it started when I was maybe like not that long ago, like mid 30s, where I was like, oh, I can't eat like I used to and I have to eat more carefully. And that means you accidentally start liking vegetables, which is not cool. And yeah, it just kind of happened. Or now it's like, oh yeah, 2 bites of ice cream. It's all I need. But there's always a spot for like good European chocolate. Like I can destroy a giant Milka bar like a pro.
Did you actually stop wanting sweets or was it just like, oh, you don't feel good now when you have sweets?
A bit of both. Just like I used to live on bagels and cream cheese. Now I'm like, oh, if I have a whole bagel, I'm going to feel gross. But I'll still do it.
Just curious. I guess this got a little derailed, but it's like a big thing on my mind.
Yeah, like back when I was like really dirtbagging, like I lived like my lunch every day at my like low paying retail job was like a bagel and a cream cheese.
Okay, we'll see. Because I've considered like, oh, maybe I should cut out sweets. But then like that's kind of the only thing that brings me happiness.
Yeah. And like as I'm dumping sugar in my coffee, like, should I? No. But are there worse things that I'm doing to myself than sugar in my coffee? Yeah. So the sugar in the coffee.
Okay, I'll just not worry about it then. Okay, last question that I think will be pretty interesting because I think people are pretty interested in like the finances of climbing. Was it tough to get the North Face to sponsor you as a paraclimber and tips for getting sponsors?
So tips for getting sponsored is tough because I had already won 2 world championships before I even got a free bag of chalk. So it's the barrier to entry is high. I wish I had advice. I think a lot of athletes would say that they got lucky, which sounds like a cop out, but I mean it. Like I got lucky because we made Stumped and Cedar Wright was one of the filmmakers and he's a North Face athlete and he got it picked up by Real Rock and North Face has a habit of signing whoever goes to Real Rock. And I think between Cedar and Conrad and Garneau as an advocate for me, they just said, you should sign her. And they were like, the athlete manager at the time, I think was on his way out and didn't care anymore. And so I got lucky there too. Cause he's like, sure, whatever, sign her.
Oh, interesting.
And then the rest is just like networking and you just, oh, again, which sounds like such an old boomer LinkedIn thing to say, like, oh, it's networking. But it's a lot of luck. I mean, I don't think it would have happened if I hadn't been living here in Denver, because then I wouldn't have made the film with Cedar. And but yeah, I think resources are tough. Like, it's not cheap flying around, especially for American athletes, because most of the World Cup events are overseas for us. It was really funny when we started hosting the World Cup in the States, like all the European athletes are complaining about the expense. And I'm like, yeah, welcome to our world for like three times a year. it's tough. So I think if you truly have a passion for it and learn how to tell your story, stuff will work out, I think. But it's mostly about telling your story. I appreciate the athletes more who maybe are undercover and would rather eat ramen than try to be sponsored so they can keep all of their freedom. You know, my sponsors are awesome. I feel like I could be myself, but I have a lot of respect for the under the radar people who are just like more into, you know, actually rock climbing than posting on Instagram, which is maybe why a lot of my Instagram posts are about my dogs than rock climbing.
Okay. Yeah.
But no, I don't. I wish I had like the magic formula, but I just don't. So I think it's just sticking with the passion part and not treating it like work. And that's the balance I'm also trying to find, is being as outrageous as possible that I might get fired one day. And
no, I think that's a good thing. I think you kind of need to like develop, yeah, like you mentioned, like develop your story, develop your personality. Otherwise, you could be like really, like a really good technical climber. And they more so like need the story, I think.
Yeah. And it's just like, and having fun. I think people are attracted to folks who have fun. You know, there's a lot of folks out there who are winning comps left and right and who want sponsorships, but just like aren't, it's not clicking for some reason. And I think when I think of those folks, I think it's because like, they're not having fun, and you want to hang out with people who want to have fun.
Okay. Well, I think that is a good place to end it then. That's all the other questions I had. Thanks for joining me today. Any other like words of wisdom or like shout outs you want to put out there?
I'm on the spot. I feel like I already shout out my husband, but I can't oversell how incredible it is to have a partner who, it occurred to me, a friend of mine actually asked me, she was just like, hey, so did you like ask Brian if he was okay with you unretiring and like doing this nightmare run to the Paralympics? Yeah. And I was like, no, I just kind of told him. He's sticking with me. So, I mean, he's having that support is more important than any sponsor. There's no paycheck that replaced having that kind of support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Words of wisdom for like other paraclimbers out there, other climbers.
Do it. Try hard.
But not so hard that they would beat you.
Exactly. On the podium. Try a little less hard if you're women's AU too. But no, get it. And their USAC this year especially is launching local competitions. So it's never going to be easy. It used to be your first competition ever would be nationals, which is a lot of pressure. But this year there's gonna be four or five across country. So if you're if you're there was one last weekend in Boston, I'm not sure where the rest of them are going to be, but there's now a more accessible, less scary way to try a paracomp, and they're great.
Cool. Okay. I didn't know about that. So that's great to get out there.
That's something that, again, USAC is investing in paraclimbing and putting resources into growing the team and community. So it's time. I'm so, 20-year-old me is so jealous right now of all these kids. So that's good.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. It's great. A good thing. Want to let people know where they can find you?
Yeah, so Moen Mountains on Instagram is where you can really follow the adventures. And I swear I'm going to be better about updating my website more, especially this sort of like journey to the Paralympics. It's a new world for me, so maybe some people want to come along for the ride.
Okay, well, thank you again. It was amazing to chat.
Yeah, so great.
Thank you so much for making it to the end of the podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe if you enjoyed. Otherwise, you are a super fake climber. If you're listening on a podcasting platform, I'd appreciate if you rate it 5 stars, and you can continue the discussion on the free competition climbing Discord linked in the description. Thanks again for listening.